Hello, my name is Martin and you are listening to Kaput Radio. Today I respond to some listeners requesting an alternative to the present debt finance system. Many of you have probably noticed several of my programs devoted to this issue. It seems central to our society and the environment, therefore asking for alternatives is only reasonable. If you have understood the implications of the Act of 1694 of the British Parliament casting the still-used method of asset-based debt money lending into law as the only and exclusive method, you will be familiar with the resultant scarcity of money, the scarcity of profits needed to operate this system with all the bemoaned bad effects of war, poverty and environmental destruction. During this historical period, we had a few exceptions with an alternative money method. Here are two of many lesser documented examples presented, proving the viability of a system not prone to the above-mentioned drawbacks. These readings have been produced in 2009. I've added a satirical piece by John Bird and John Hunter relating to the global financial crisis brought about by very bad banking to leave you with a laugh. Welcome to the show. Hello, my name is Martin and you are listening to Kaput Radio. Today I respond to some listeners requesting an alternative to the present debt finance system. Many of you have probably noticed several of my programs devoted to this issue. It seems central to our society and the environment, therefore asking for alternatives is only reasonable. If you have understood the implications of the Act of 1694 of the British Parliament casting the still-used method of asset-based debt money lending into law as the only and exclusive method, you will be familiar with the resultant scarcity of money, the scarcity of profits needed to operate this system with all the bemoaned bad effects of war, poverty and environmental destruction. During this historical period, we had a few exceptions with an alternative money method. Here are two of many lesser documented examples presented, proving the viability of a system not prone to the above-mentioned drawbacks. These readings have been produced in 2009. I've added a satirical piece by John Bird and John Hunter relating to the global financial crisis brought about by very bad banking to leave you with a laugh. Welcome to the show.
Countless published social and ecological research and survey reports over many years have been presented in many languages and types of media, repeatedly confirming humanity and its environment is threatened with the imminent social and physical disintegration that seems to be already underway. These destructive elements involved in humanity's sorry plight, such as social unrest and poverty, and emissions of environmental pollutants have increased in epic proportions and continue to rise alongside science's advice to the contrary. Critical to humanity's short-term financial survival is the financial demand that the economy must at any price maximise profits regardless of societal and environmental costs. A debt finance system creates artificial scarcity all around. It enforces an economy driven by competition of getting bigger, fatter in order to prevail over other competitors. In the debt-based system, ever-accelerating growth is mandatory, a monumental setup for perpetual conflict with everyone and everything, including this finite planet. The actual reason for this suicidal financial demand lies within the manner money as debt is created. There are many examples of illustrating the topic in articles, interviews, in audio and video. You can read Modern Money Mechanics explaining the present debt system. Fortunately, there exists an example of a sound monetary system that has been successfully used, historically proven, is on record and has been enshrined in the constitution of some nations, such as Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution of the United States of America, stating, "The Congress shall have power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, and other standards, but foremost to borrow money on the credit of the United States." During the early days of the English colonies in North America, local councils and local governing bodies did not borrow in order to finance the development of facilities, such as roads, buildings and transport and council services. The county created and issued its own currency. That became known as colonial scrip. It was paid into the community by the county as wages and salaries to those who worked planning, building and producing for the county's infrastructure. This scrip, instead of having to be returned to the lender, continued to circulate and reflect the value of the other goods and services it provided. It became the community's purchasing power. It was accepted as wages and salaries by those who produced. Skills and capabilities then gave the local scrip its value, and not the other way around. This type of finance gave the community a stable and prosperous economy. The currency was created as a representation of the real wealth, that is, goods and services. What made this medium of exchange really important was that it enabled a fair trade of products. It was not a representation of debt, but a symbol of a community's capability. It was not on loan to be returned and cancelled, but stayed in circulation. Consequently, under the scrip method, there existed no financial limitation that restricted the productive capabilities of those who used it. The community's only restraints were their skills level and the availability of their non-financial resources.
British banks and interest groups felt threatened in their business of lending debt-based currency. And the seeming success of the American colonies spread around to other countries. The idea could not longer be tolerated by British interest, and they decided to fight the new American system of local scrips with subversive sweet talk, swindle, and false claims about securities. Eventually, they succeeded, and debt finance prevailed since, except for a few minor upheavals, until today. In Europe, in the midst of the Depression, a similar attempt was made for the obvious lack of accessing capital, over-indebtedness, and growing social upheavals.
Demonstrators are also expected to take to the streets in capital Moscow and other towns and cities. But now, with the economy in deep trouble,
most of the protesters came from rural areas of Mexico.
Bigger street demonstrations. 30,000 have marched to government houses.
France is staging the first general strike in any major industrialized country since the crisis. There are hundreds of thousands of people here in Paris on one of the main demonstrations. There are 200 demonstrations all across France.
The Virgil experiment that was conducted from July 1932 to November 1933 is a classic example of the potential efficacy of local currencies. Virgil is a small town in Austria with 4,000 inhabitants that introduced a local scrip during the Great Depression. By 1932, unemployment in Virgil had risen to 30%. The local government had amassed debts of 1.3 million Austrian shillings against cash reserves of 40,000 Austrian shillings. Local construction and civic maintenance had come to a standstill. On the initiative of the town's mayor, Michael Unterguggenberger, the local government printed 32,000 in labour certificates, which carried a negative 1% monthly interest rate and could be converted into shillings at 98% of face value. An equivalent amount in shillings was deposited in the local bank as cover for the certificates in case of mass redemption and earned interest for the government. The certificates circulated so rapidly that only 12,000 were ever actually put into circulation. According to reports by the mayor and economists of the day who studied the experiment, the scrip was readily accepted by local merchants and the local population. It utilized the scrip to carry out 100,000 Austrian shillings in public works projects involving construction and repair of roads, bridges, tanks, drainage systems, factories, and buildings. The scrip was also accepted as legal tender for payment of local taxes. In the 1 year that the currency was in circulation, it circulated 13 times faster than the official shilling and served as a catalyst to the local economy. The heavy arrears in local tax collection declined dramatically. Local government revenue rose from 2,400 Austrian shillings in 1931 to 20,400 Austrian shillings in 1932. Unemployment was eliminated while it remained very high throughout the rest of the country. No increase in prices was observed, Based on the dramatic success of the Virgil experiment, several other communities introduced similar scripts. In spite of the tangible benefits of the program, it met with stiff opposition from the Regional Socialist Party and from the Austrian Central Bank, which opposed the local currency as an infringement on its powers over the currency. As a result, the program was suspended, unemployment rose, and the local economy soon degenerated to the level of other communities in the country.
George Parr, you are an investment banker.
Yes, I am, yes.
And, of course, we've just had an extremely serious banking crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of people in the city, like yourself, who earn millions in salaries and bonuses. So, shouldn't you have seen this coming?
Well, it is true. We didn't actually foresee it in the strict sense of the word.
Or in any sense.
Or in any sense of the word. No. We didn't foresee it, but when it happened, we did notice it. which is almost as good, isn't it?
Well, we just had the first run on a bank in this country for 140 years. Yeah. You're a banker. What is your reaction?
Well, of course, everybody in banking, we all felt deeply embarrassed.
You're embarrassed?
Embarrassed, yes. I hardly dared take my Ferrari in for its service yesterday.
What are you going to do about it?
Well, what can I do about it? The bloody thing needs a service. I've only got two Ferraris.
Yes, but, I mean, what was the cause of this?
Oh, it was about the banking crisis. Well, of course, yes. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't banking's fault. It was entirely the fault of Mervyn King.
But he's just put £10 billion into the banking system.
Yes.
Isn't that what you were asking for?
Yes, but it's done it far too late, you see. I mean, nobody wants it anymore. You should have done it much earlier, because it was obvious that the Northern Rock was getting into difficulties. It was obvious that most people in the city were borrowing too much and lending too riskily.
Including you?
Well, I was just doing what everybody else was doing. That's how we operate in the city. And what I want to know is, why didn't he do it earlier? Why wait until the entire banking sector looked as stupid as it actually was?
So what you're saying is that although Mervyn King might not have been able to prevent the crisis, he could have prevented the spectacle of people queuing up in the high street to try and get their money out.
Exactly.
Yes, and people were queuing at 2 o'clock in the morning.
2 o'clock in the morning, yes. I mean, the British people have only ever done that for Tim Henman, and look how badly that always turned out.
But these scenes must have been humiliating for the banking industry.
We don't like to see it. It makes us look silly.
Silly. Well, what about the banks falling over themselves to pick up these packages of dodgy mortgages, and they have very little idea how much they're worth, if they're worth anything at all?
Well, that's not silly. That's a sophisticated market in operation.
So you don't think there is anything fundamentally wrong with the banking system?
Look, there are some very, very clever men in the city. I mean, just an example, the fact that Alliance and Leicester lost a third of its value in a day and the very next day got a third of its value back, that shows the system is fundamentally sound and rational.
Yes, but can you explain why, at the beginning of the Northern Rock crisis, the government made an offer which didn't reassure the public? The Chancellor of the Exchequer himself said people shouldn't worry because their money was perfectly safe.
Well, that's very simple. The public are used to the government telling them lies.
You mean if the government is prepared to tell lies about the reason for invading another country? They wouldn't be too bothered about lying about people's money.
No, exactly. What Alistair Darling should have done was to say to everybody, go down to Northern Rock now, take every last penny out. You see? People have said, well, there must be some reason the government's telling me to take my money out. I'm going to leave it where it is.
And then the whole thing might have just sort of faded away.
It just got blown over. Well, it should never have happened in the first place. I mean, it was only because some bright spark said, how much do you think these American houses are actually worth? And, of course, as soon as they asked that question, we all panicked.
Because you found out?
No, we didn't find out. We still haven't found out how much they're worth, if anything.
Despite what you call a very, very sophisticated market.
Look, we went on the assumption that property values always go up.
Well, that's not very sophisticated,
is it? It's as sophisticated as we ever get.
Yes, but, I mean, why, if this is the case, and that's what happened, every time you sell someone a financial product, you put a big warning on it, saying, well, your investments may go down as well as go up.
Yes, well, we have to do that. It's one of the pettifogging regulations, but it's only meant for, it's only meant for ignorant punters.
So it doesn't apply to you?
Certainly not, certainly not. And of course, the punters themselves are now reassured because the government have guaranteed their deposits.
Yes, and also put £10 billion into the banking sector. Yes, do you think that was absolutely necessary?
It was necessary as a symbolic gesture because what the market needs is confidence.
Whose confidence?
My confidence. The confidence that I have a 35-room house to go to with six cars in the garage and a private helicopter, and that I'll earn enough of my Christmas bonus to pay my Filipino staff £12 a month.
But these are huge sums that we're talking about here. Yeah. I mean, where in the end is all this money going to come from?
Well, I don't know. Wherever governments get their money. Taxation, I suppose. I don't know anything about tax. I never pay any.
But don't you think it's wrong that extremely rich people, people that run, I don't know, private equity funds, and people like you, hardly pay any tax at all?
There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. The city is far too valuable to the British economy. In any case, as we keep saying, if you tax us, we'll just go abroad. And that is not an idle threat. We can go and wreck somebody else's financial system.
Finally, can we talk about moral hazard?
About what, sir?
Moral hazard.
No, sorry, I know what hazard means. What's the other word?
Oh, never mind. The point about moral hazard is that the thought is that executives like yourself will go on making more and more stupid and more risky loans in order to put up the profits of their bank, because when everything goes wrong, the Bank of England is going to come along and bail them out.
Well, I certainly hope so. I'm looking forward to it.
Look, I don't want to be insulting, but it does seem to me that you haven't learned anything from this whole episode.
On the contrary, I've learned one very important lesson.
And what is that?
And that is, if you're going to make a cock-up, be sure you make it an absolutely enormous cock-up, because then the government will bail you out.
Kaput Radio.
Where the hell have you been?
Saving the world.
Thanks for listening. You heard two examples of an alternative money system, both not borrowing money into circulation, which is the essential difference to the present system. And they were read by Tanya and to Louise. Then you heard John Bird and John Hunter with their satirical sketch Investment Banker. To learn more about the present global debt system, check out Kaput Radio number 287, Global Banking Since 1694. You can find this at radioforall.net, that is radiofigureforall.net. You need to use the navigation buttons and follow the Sirius Kaput X Radio, or simply try to Google Kaput X Radio. Kaput, by the way, with two T's. My name is Martin, and, well, catch you soon, and goodbye.